This is Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by Southwest Wisconsin Technical College in Fenimore. Did you know that Southwest Tech is for people with a passion for golf? That's right. They offer a golf course management program with a 100% job placement rate. The program helps students learn the industry and turn that passion into a rewarding career. The golf course management program at Southwest Tech is led by PGA professional Scott Kennedy. He also coaches the Chargers golf team in the NJCAA. Men, women, there are golf opportunities for everyone at Southwest Tech in Fenimore. To learn more, go to swtc.edu/golf. Hello, everybody. Rob Hernandez, joined by Gary D'Amato, as we are every week here on Talking.Golf. It's a football Monday. Gary D'Amato, the Packers are playing tonight. And I got to lead off our podcast by telling you where I'm watching the Packer game tonight, because I think you're going to like this.
All right. Where are you watching it from, Rob?
And I hate to say this because I know you're coming off a little bit of a cold weekend, but we're going to be outdoors under the stars in Rancho Santa Fe, which has been the home to Phil Mickelson for a number of years. I think he's relocating over to Florida, but a nice place on the main drag. During COVID, they set up an outdoor patio and a large screen TV. And I'm trying to think. The sun's setting earlier, so I'm thinking by halftime we'll have gone from daylight to darkness. And I'm really hoping by halftime that the Packers have this one in the bag. But waking up to Davante Adams' tweets that he's not going to play tonight, not exactly reassuring for Packer fans. So we're going to start by asking. I'm going to ask you, where are you watching the Packer game tonight? And where is your favorite place to watch Packer games in general?
Oh, wow. Well, my favorite place to watch Packer games is Lambeau Field, Rob.
Good one. Good one, Gary.
Pretty hard to be Lambeau.
But, that's right.
Hey, I'm in my living room tonight, and I've got a big screen TV, and I sit about 5 feet from it, so the players look life-size. And, you know, I've watched, you know, having once covered the Packers, and I cover them in most of the stadiums around the United States, it's always great to see him live. But you know what? My living room with a barley pop in one hand and some popcorn in the other, Rob, it's pretty hard to beat that.
Well, a buddy of mine and I are meeting another friend, and we thought we'd and of course out here, there's just when you want someplace halfway, there's a mountain in the way. So you know that you have to go either further than you want or shorter than you want. So we're taking the bullet and going down all the way to the North County of San Diego, which is about a 45-minute drive for us. But it's going to be a good cause. It's been a great start to the season. And it's that transition, Gary, from golf to football that leads into kind of the thrust of our podcast today on Talking.Golf. It's fall golf. And we've kind of identified a couple of things that we thought we would cover for our listeners that deal with the great season that is fall golf, because it is different than any other season, in my estimation. For you, what's different about fall golf than the golf that you play leading up to it, especially in the summertime when everything's in such pristine condition?
Yeah, you know, my favorite round of the year is probably that first round in spring when you get that first 56 degree day and it's sunny and you stick a peg in the ground and off you go and you're playing golf for the year. But you know, after that, I would have to say my favorite rounds are now, you know, from mid-September to the end of the golf season. I think it's a great time to play golf in Wisconsin. You know, we're still going to get some 70-degree days, but a lot of 60-degree days where the sun's out, the humidity's down, and, you know, you wear one layer, maybe a sweater or a long-sleeve shirt, and it's just an enjoyable time of the year to play golf. It's really my favorite time, Rob, with the leaves changing and starting to fall even now around me, but I love playing golf in September and October.
Well, that brings us to our do's and don'ts for fall golf. You talked about a couple layers. How many layers of clothes, Gary, is too many in your mind for fall golf?
If you look like the Michelin man, it's probably too many, Rob. I try to go with, if it's a really cold day, if it's, you know, 50 degrees or 48 or 51, I try to go with a t-shirt and then a long sleeve shirt over it. And then if it's really cold, maybe a sweater vest or a vest, And that way, I think you can still swing comfortably, but stay warm. I think if you start adding layers on top of that, it gets cumbersome and it gets hard to swing a golf club. So for me, it's like a t-shirt, a long sleeve shirt, and maybe a sweater vest. How about you? You don't play much golf in the cold weather anymore. You forgot what that's like.
I forgot what that's like indeed. but when I was, I'm just not, I just have a hard time. You know me, I like to wear shorts year round. So that's why I moved out here in the first place. I'll go, short sleeve shirt. And then maybe a rain jacket under a vest just to kind of keep some mobility with the arms. It's when I've got to put that, sweatshirt or, heavy duty fleece pullover on that I'm walking that fine line between, can I actually swing a golf club to the point where this is going to be fun? Or is it time to hang up the clubs for the summer? And at this point, I would say that, the three modest layers, but, I was going back through some photos of some past state golf tournaments and in the fall, the girls, and came across some of the young ladies that were wearing, what looked to be some pretty heavy duty winter coats. And I just thought, wow, that's a lot. But, you got to do what'll get you through the round. And then don't get me started, Gary, on when you go out for a round of fall golf and all of a sudden clouds move in and it rains. That is the worst, because then how do you stick a rain proof jacket over all those layers? I mean, you've got to have like that triple XL in the bag just for fall golf, so you can put that over everything else you've got on.
Man, Rob, when I covered that State Senior Open and it was 50 degrees and blowing 25 miles an hour and raining, I don't know how those guys played in that. It was just, I had a hard time just walking with an umbrella. It was miserable. Yeah, when it rains and it's cold, not a fun time to play golf. But my other question, Rob, to you is ski cap or golf cap? I used to think the ski cap on a golf course was a really bad look. But now I say, if it's cold enough, put that ski cap on, because a golf cap isn't going to keep your head or your ears warm.
I've not only got a good arsenal of golf course stocking caps. My favorite is a couple that I got on clearance back when I was a member up at Reedsburg Country Club. It was a real stretchy fabric, and I can keep it high on the ear, or I can pull it all the way down to my chin. And but then I've also gotten my arsenal, Gary, you'll like this. One of our outings at Black Wolf Run, after they opened, I think I got some shop credit and wound up going in there and getting the little knitted thing that goes around your ears, the ear warmers, but not like the stretchy kind, but it's the cloth kind that's basically almost like a face mask now that we've seen what those are like, and but over your ears, and that sometimes helps as well, because the ears are what get coldest first, I think. And although I keep my hair cut short these days, your hair is a little bit on the thin side as well.
Don't go there.
I won't go there. But that's where fall golf takes a toll too. We can get pretty cold up top too, can't we?
Absolutely. And the mask now that everyone has to wear almost everywhere you go, that comes in handy now in golf, I think. I've got the stretch kind that you put around your neck and you can lift up. It's the neck warmer now, so that works too.
I think you're going to see a lot of gaiters out there this fall, Gary, because people have them. And honestly, they shouldn't be afraid to use them, because right now it's politically correct and it's going to keep you warm in the November. So I think go for it. It's the COVID-19 era of fall golf, so go for it. One of the great pitfalls of playing fall golf is the fact that maintenance on the course has to be done at this time of year for the overall good. And aerified greens are probably the biggest bugaboo, aerified tee boxes too, but mainly the greens. What's your opinion on aerified greens? Necessary evil, yes, but how do you play on them? And do you try to avoid them if you see on the online tee sheet that there's an aerification notification on the golf course website?
I do try to avoid them. I played Mascouten a few weeks ago and they'd aerified, but they have 27 holes. So they were doing 9 holes at a time. And that works good because they close 9 holes with aerified greens, but you can play the other 18. So facilities that have more than 18 holes, it's not really a bad thing. But yeah, you can get into playing on aerified greens where your ball kind of bounces all over the place because of all the little punch holes in the greens. But if you know that going in, it's a nice day. It's in the 60s. You know the greens have been aerified, you know, a week ago or so, and they're still healing. You know, you just kind of take it with a grain of salt and just realize, you know, you're not going to have smooth putts on every green. And if you miss a putt or two, well, you might have missed them anyway. So that's the way I look at it.
Well, and out here we do it as a golf coach in the fall. We take a different approach also, and even in our modest, you know, girls competitions. And that's, you know, we employ the automatic two-putt rule. And what that does in that situation for those golfers, Gary, is it shows them the importance of hitting greens in regulation. You get a green in regulation, you're going to walk off with a par. And, and for us at that time of year, it's a great teaching tool, especially in our non-league matches where, you know, there's really nothing on the line other than player development. It, you know, that's a way to do it. And I'm sure everybody has their own little, rules in their group about how to do that. I think it's a great opportunity to try to, be aggressive on putts because, you know, the slower you hit the ball on aerified greens, the more those marks are going to, disrupt the flow of it. And so if you take a good firm putt online, nothing, extreme, we're not trying to, bank the golf ball off the stick, but I think that helps too. But, I don't have a problem with them at all. In fact, I was watching an awards ceremony video from one of the regionals last week, and I believe it was the Nicolet Regional over at Brown Deer Park, and the host said that, commented that they had just aerified the greens a day before and you couldn't even tell. And, I mean, the one thing that's changed, I think, the most in golf course maintenance is how quickly you can get those holes to fill in. And a lot of courses are using aerification machines that are smaller in their punches, and that allows them to not only grow together back together faster, but it really doesn't – it almost seems like you're putting on regular greens. And I think, again – the practice on how you aerify also has a big role in the experience as a golfer trying to play through that point in the golf season. But I don't have a problem with them. And, if I go to a course where I never see them aerify the greens, I'm wondering if I really want to go back there in the summertime, because I don't think the greens are going to roll nearly as fast as they will at any course that would have punched them in the fall or spring.
Yeah, you're right. There'll be, courses that don't aerify their greens, the greens get – the fats build up and they get soft and spongy, and it's hard to keep them firm the way you want greens to be. It's hard to get the speed the way you want it to be. So it's a practice that all golf courses should do, and almost all do. And you just have to deal with it. Like you said, you just, it's coming, especially this time of year, you're going to run into some aerified greens. And if it's a recreational round, just go out there, enjoy the day and try to make putts, and don't worry if you miss one.
Gary, since I'm not a summer shandy Oktoberfest type of beer drinker, you're going to have to carry us on this one. Best post-round beverage in the fall.
Wow. That's a good one, Rob. I like an occasional cider in the fall. So if a course has a good cider, a hard cider, I would be interested in that. But I'm more of a soft drink beverage guy, Rob. So you've played golf with me. I've always got a Diet Coke in my hand. And the same holds true, I think, in the fall. But, a good apple cider or a good hard cider, I think, is a really great drink in the fall. How about you?
When it's really cold, there's nothing like coming in to a nice mug of hot chocolate. I'm not a coffee drinker, so hot chocolate's my drink of choice. And sometimes just to warm up the hands, even before I get in the car and blast the heater, a good thing of hot chocolate will be good. But I got it, and I'm right with you with the cola consumption, the Diet Coke, Diet Pepsi consumption. And one of my favorite memories, when my dad and I would always go out to the 9-hole course in Wisconsin Rapids, Homestead Supper and Country Club on the north side, we'd always end our round with a Pepsi in the clubhouse. And then my first exposure to competitive golf was in the middle school, and I was on the east side of the river. So our home course was Tri-City Golf Course, a 9-hole course next to Bullseye Country Club. And then across the river, the West Side Junior High, their home course was Homestead, my old home course. And I can remember playing our final match of like my eighth grade year out at Homestead. And of course, the great thing or not so great thing about fall golf is the diminishing daylight. And you go there, in theory, after school for a 9-hole match. We were racing to beat daylight, but then The other thing is, you know, we're also getting colder every hole we go. And so by the time we got done, you know, the clubhouse is the only thing lit up. And I can remember going in and in honor of all those times I would go golf with my dad, I had a Diet Pepsi, even though it was cold. Nice. After a fall golf round. So, you know, again, you do what you have to do. We're yeah. not very exciting. So if you're listening to this podcast, you're definitely not going to drink with us in the fall after a round of golf. So we'll have to maybe put out a call for other ideas as to what we've missed in terms of the experience of a post-round beverage in the fall.
Yeah. I'm sure people out there are thinking Jack Daniels or a nice bourbon or scotch, you know, or something hot with a little liquor added to it. But that's not really me, but that's okay. I don't begrudge anyone who wants to treat themselves that way. That's for sure.
All right, Gary, last but not least, best part of the state for fall golf that you've experienced.
Wow. You know, any place that has maple and birch trees. I love the color of those trees when they turn. And obviously you can find, you know, those kind of trees on dozens, if not hundreds of courses around the state. The central part of the state, I think, is really good. Door County, I think, is great, has great fall golf. It's hard for me to pick one spot because once the colors light up, the whole state, I think, is really good, Rob.
I like, you know, the one that came to mind, and I'm right with you. I would probably side with the North Woods because I've had some good experiences there in the fall. I can remember playing a round of golf with one of my former colleagues, Scotty Williams, from the State Journal up in, he and his family had a cabin up in Eagle River. He actually got me out in a boat fishing, Gary, in the morning. And then we went over to Eagle River Golf Course in the afternoon. Unforgettable. And I've still got, you know, those old, you know, 3x5 photos of us, with, I mean, you couldn't miss the color in the background. I mean, everywhere you look, there was fall colors, but the one place that I think is, you know, you factor in both the golf course and then the surroundings around the golf course. The House on the Rock Resort in Spring Green, 27 holes, the original Robert Trent Jones course, plus the quote unquote new nine. It's, you know, what, 25, 30 years old, at least by now, by Andy North. And, you know, there's those kind of trees that you described all over the place. But then on the way there to, you know, one of the famous farmers markets, Peck's Farm Market, just east of Spring Green. And is a place that we would go a lot of times with the kids to get a pumpkin. So when you're talking fall golf, you can't, you know, our schedules are busy, Gary. We can't just play golf. We got to package other things in. So I say go to the House on the Rock Resort on the way there. Stop off at Peck's, get yourself a pumpkin. You know, maybe some of the other you know, window dressings for the decorations out front. You can probably even get a bale of hay over there to put on the front step too, and then. They also have a petting zoo. So it was, I'm not sure how that's going this year with COVID, but, you know, that was always fun to be able to drive. And it was a good drive too, going west and seeing the trees along Highway 14 on the way out there from Madison. So I'll go House on the Rock there for that one.
Yeah, it's a really good choice, Rob. And then I've got one more question for you as it relates to falling leaves and the golf ball. You go with a white golf ball, a yellow golf ball, or an orange golf ball this time of year? What do you do?
That's right. Well, you know, back in the day, it was always the orange golf ball. But I do both in terms, I usually go yellow in the fall just because the optic yellow, I don't think can be recreated in the in a leaf color and as opposed to some of the orange ones. And so I usually go optic yellow, but it's just so hard for me to, you know, to see the white ones in among the leaves. And that gives me a fighting chance. So I'll go optic yellow. How about you?
Yeah, I agree. That's my ball color of choice when the leaves start falling. I go to the yellow ball. I play white ball almost exclusively year round, but at this time of the year, the yellow ball is a good alternative.
I tell you what, I get excited during the summertime when I find an optic yellow Titleist. Because that's going to my ball for the fall, and that's yeah. So that's always fun because, you know, of course, too cheap to buy my own dozen, but optic yellow it is. So there you go, everything you possibly want to know about fall golf, and we're afraid to ask. We've got that covered here on Talking Deck Golf, which of course sponsored again this week by Southwest Wisconsin Technical College in Fenimore. They're the college with the golf course management program and a 100% job placement rate after graduation. The golf course management program at Southwest Tech is led by PGA professional Scott Kennedy, also coaches the Chargers golf team in the NJCAA. For more information on Southwest Tech and their golf course management program, go to swtc.edu/golf. Gary, we're going to turn the tables here and wrap up our podcast. It is sectional week in girls golf for the WIA tournament series. And as we record the podcast, I love it. All the people out there, we've got two sectionals going today in Division One. I believe one up in Toma and another one down at Mequon Park in Mequon. And Tony Pritchard, the Menominee Falls golf coach, and I'm going to have to look up, this isn't one of his players, I don't believe, but we've got a hole-in-one on number six by Gabby Cox. I'll quick look up where Gabby's from. And wow. But we've already got our first ace of the year of the sectional week here down there at Mequon Park. And boy, nothing more exciting than a hole-in-one, Gary, but to get it in a sectional has got to be amazing.
No kidding. What a thrill for that young lady, man. That's fantastic, Rob.
So let me just give a quick look here at the tee sheet, because I think Gabby Cox is playing with one of Tony's golfers down there. And Gabby is from Germantown. She's a junior, and she's playing a group ahead of Lily Pete's, Tony's golfer from Menominee Falls. So they were the first group out today, and Gabby Cox with the hole-in-one on number six at Mequon Park. But Gary, it's sectional week, and I bet you can ask me any question, or at least the five that I gave you before the podcast, and I'll have all the answers.
Yeah, Rob, this is definitely your area of expertise, and it is my weak link when it comes to golf in our state. Everything I know about high school golf, I learned from you, Rob. So thanks on behalf of all of our listeners and readers to the great job you do covering high school golf in our state. And I'm sure many, many people feel the same way. So my first question for you, Rob, and I hope you know the answers because you wrote the questions, but seriously. So, rivalries in golf. I mean, okay, there's not an Ohio State, Michigan, or a Wisconsin, Minnesota, or Alabama, Auburn in high school girls golf. But are there rivalries, and is there a budding rivalry this year?
There are two budding rivalries this year, Gary. I'm glad you asked. because they're special and they're going to be good, and and one of them might even be historic. And we'll start first in Division One, where Brookfield Central, which has been to the state tournament in girls golf 27 times, tied with Mequon Homestead for the most ever. They've only won, I believe, it's three state championships. The last one came in 2003. Brian Scrobel runs an exceptional program over there. His varsity reserve team had a nine-hole stroke average this year that would have ranked 10th in the state. And is right now his varsity team is ranked number one. However, tomorrow down at Franklin, they're going to be pushed at Oakwood Park by Heartland Arrowhead. And what makes this rivalry great is the fact that the two teams are led by great golfers, and they have a lot of great golfers behind them. Brookfield Central has Sarah Balding, who was the runner-up at state a year ago to Joe Baranchik. Of course, Joe Baranchik of Bayport is a senior this year, Gary, but Bayport opted out of the fall. They're going to compete in the spring. So on paper, Sarah Balding, your top returning golfer, and she's leading Brookfield Central. And then you've got the reason why it's been so fun to cover high school sports for as long as I have is because every year you get a newcomer to a certain sport that says, can't wait to see what she's going to be like by, her senior year. But then that means, much like the coaches, you got to hang around 4 years to find out. And so that you keep that cycle going. And that's Jessica Geiser down there at Arrowhead. And she's off to a great, great start. She was playing women's tournaments in seventh and eighth grade. And, has carried that experience over and has really become one of the dominant golfers on the high school scene here this year. And last week down at Broadlands in North Prairie, she shot a 500 par 67, had seven birdies, two bogeys, and won that one by seven shots over Nora Roberts of Union Grove. They were the only two golfers to break 80. So it wasn't like everybody was going lights out. It played, I believe, at about 5,000. It usually plays a little shorter than normal. But there's just a lot of birdie holes there, and Jessica Geiser got it going. So those two teams are going to go head-to-head tomorrow at Oakwood Park in Franklin, and then in theory again next week at Black Wolf Run in Kohler. that's the budding rivalry. In Division II, similar thing going in Northwest Wisconsin, where Prescott and St. Croix Central both qualified for state last year. Prescott finished second to Madison Edgewood, which repeated as state champion. And then St. Croix Central finished third. This year, Edgewood not quite as strong or as deep as they have been. This could be the first year in the since they went to two-division play in 2003 that public school wins the Division II field. Of course, Edwards won 15 state titles. I believe 12 of them have come in the two-division format. Racine Prairie Schools won a couple, and then a couple years ago, La Crosse Aquinas. So a great rivalry. Prescott and St. Croix Central, both out of the strong middle border conference, where they compete against a Division I school, New Richmond, all year. And Prescott with a great number one golfer in Ava Sally. And then Sally Vangsness of St. Croix Central last week with a breakthrough performance, shot a 76 to beat Ava by one at the regional. So great rivalry going in Division II. And, of course, Brookfield Central and Heartland Arrowhead head and shoulders above right now everybody else in Division I. Should be a fun stretch here with those rivals.
Yeah, very good answer, Rob. Now, okay, so there's always teams that, whose performances exceed expectations, you know, in regionals and sectionals, and there's always a couple teams who don't reach maybe their expectations. So when you look back on at least regionals, coming out of regionals, what to you was the biggest surprise or surprises, Rob?
Well, the biggest surprise had to have been, as a team, Divine Savior Holy Angels out of Milwaukee winning the Nicolet Regional ahead of Homestead, as I mentioned, 27 times to the state tournament, and Cedarburg. Cedarburg and Homestead were 1-2 in the North Shore Conference, and Cedarburg with a great number one golfer in Elise Hoven. They played that one at Brown Deer Park. That's the one that was at Brown Deer, and Elise Hoven shot 81 to medal, so it played tough that day. Regionals last week played tough, but Divine Savior, what was neat about that performance is they had a freshman breakthrough. Katie Krieger shot an 86, and then they had four scores at 91 and 92 before right after her, and that was enough to get it done and get through to the sectional. So again, this is the time of year, Gary, where for a lot of the kids in high school girls golf, you've practiced Monday through Friday, and you've played tournaments now more than you would any other time of the year. So you're starting to see kids start to, realize their potential. And in many cases, that is manifested in the fact that they're making impactful performances for their team. And that was the case last year with Katie Krieger and then the three other girls who factored in the scoring for Divine Savior. That was probably the biggest eye-opener there in any division. Out of the half dozen to dozen regionals that were out there a week ago.
Now, Rob, I'm going to ask you to be the Warren Buffett of girls golf in our state and tell me about the stock market as far as which teams maybe improve their – what are the Apple and the Google, I guess, of high school girls golf, which teams improve their stock, from regionals going to sectionals?
Well, I just got done waxing poetic about Brookfield Central and Heartland Arrowhead and how nobody's going to touch them. But I'd have to say the biggest jump in the stock market last week was the Wanakee Warriors. Wanakee, this is a great story, Gary. Because of COVID, they were not allowed by their school district to compete outside of Dane County during the regular season and were given a pseudo-exemption to compete in the WA Tournament Series wherever their success would take them. Well, it took them to Portage Country Club last week, first time out of Dane County competing. They shoot a 328. And Izzy Stricker, I think you know the name. And Allie Kinzel, a senior. Izzy playing number five as a freshman. And, and really all the parts on that Wanakee team are interchangeable. They've all had the low score at some point or another. I think a real powerful weapon is to send someone named Stricker out at your number five spot, the first golfer off, because in girls golf, as they go 5-4-3-2-1 off the tee, and then the best golfers statistically are always teeing off last. So Stricker and Kinzel with 80s, but Wanakee was able to get four really good scores under 85. Jordan Shipshock, whose father John is the head pro over at Bishop's Bay Country Club, where we played this summer, Gary, She shot 85. And then Sydney Grimm, the number one golfer, whose dad is the superintendent of Black Hawk Country Club in Madison, she shot 83 with a 39 on the front nine. And it always helps in golf because, you know, now with live scoring and, you know, there's so much information available that wasn't there, you know, back in our day. All these kids know how they're doing. And so when the four girls behind Sydney Grimm hear that she's shooting 39 on the front, well, that fires them up. And that 328 was as good as it's gotten this year for Wana Key. And, you know, we don't know Izzy Stricker, Jordan Shipshock, they're both freshmen, you know, how good they can get yet this year. But, you know, that was the first day this year they really put, you know, four good rounds together on the same day. So keep an eye on Wana Key, your stock leader after the regional.
Rob, you mentioned earlier in the podcast that about 25% of the girls' golf programs opted out of the fall season and are going to spring. So I'm wondering how the WIAA dealt with that in lining up the sectionals. Do you feel that the sectionals are balanced?
For the most part, they are. It was most difficult in Division One, where they lopped off two of the sectionals. So this week we're down to only, I believe it's four sectionals in Division One, as opposed to six, and then the usual three in Division Two. And they did as good a job as they could have, Gary, without really scratching some heads and moving people too far north. You know, they're always able to move schools from the north side of Milwaukee up to play with the Fox Valley teams. But with Brookfield Central and Heartland Arrowhead being as strong as they are, it's going to leave probably the most unhappy faces tomorrow over at Oakwood Park, because there have been a couple of gals from the Milwaukee area who played some really great golf this year, namely Ellie Baring out of Oak Creek, who finished second to Sarah Balding at the Racine Case Regional last week over at Ives Grove with a 74. And then Amanda Carvalho, who's been right at or below 80 almost the whole year. She's out of New Berlin Eisenhower West. And in theory, they would be two real heavy favorites to take the individual berths. Now, the top two teams at each sectional, Gary, go to state. Then the next three individuals not on those teams go to state. So there's three individuals that get to go beyond, in theory, Brookfield Central and Heartland Arrowhead. And you've got a really good Franklin team with really, Gary, four or five golfers that could go. And then you've also got down in the Kenosha area, twins down at Kenosha, at Westosha Central, I should say, that also have the opportunity to go. Caitlin and Kylie Walker are their names. And so there's, you know, there are a lot of kids, and actually the Walkers are with Kettle Moraine up at Mequon today, so they're safe. I got to go back and make sure I predicted that right now that I look at this, but I think in that it's in that last in that Racine Case Regional, Waukesha Co-op Regional, where you're going to have some broken hearts. Nora Roberts is the one that is going to, in theory, go third, but then you've got all these other great gals behind them. Leah Minch of Muskego had a great regional. Claire Keibel of Hamilton, and then her teammate last week, Lauren Ambukian, shot an 80. And again, who can perform on that one day? It's probably the most demanding of all the WIA sports, Gary, because you know how fickle golf can be. And if you don't have it together, and we've had a lot of great, and what prompted a lot of the changes for the WIA to kind of balance things out better than they had was the fact that you were having state tournaments where you were missing potentially, you know, kids that could win state championships, and that just wasn't right. They've done a pretty good job. I think that sectional tomorrow at Franklin is the one where I'm not sure that both get through. And in fact, as it relates to the Walker twins who I referred to, I've only got one getting through because out of that Kettle Moraine, you know, regional, you've also got you know, a number of kids that you know, are not going to get through as teams, and that could be and from that Divine Savior thing, that regional at Divine Savior, Holy Angels won last week. You've got Madison Haugen of Brookfield East, a freshman, Elise Hoven of Cedarburg. You know, if her team doesn't get through as a team, she's going to have to be able. She finished third at state last year. She's going to have one of those spots, and that only leaves one for the Walker twins. So that's that was where the so really two sectionals, Gary, that it's going to be pretty tense coming down the stretch for those kids trying to get to state.
Yeah, that, you know, the sectional day reminds me a little bit of like a Monday qualifier for the PGA Tour. There's so much pressure. You're trying to make it to the big show. And it's not that you relax once you get to state, but there's a big relief, I'm sure, for many, many young men and women to get to state, to get through that sectional day. It's a lot of pressure. Speaking of predictions, Rob, I'm going to ask you to haul out your crystal Titleist ball and choose the state champions today. If you had to guess who's going to win the team and the individual honors at this point, based on what you've seen this fall, what would you say?
I'm going to quick start with the individual, because here's something that's really interesting. With the move to Black Wolf Run and Kohler, all bets are off. It's a really tough, demanding, visually intimidating golf course compared to University Ridge, in my opinion. And partially, Gary, because these kids have played University Ridge now for almost, you know, for basically their entire lives. Knowing the state tournament's there, you know, on your way up, you're probably trying to get there to see what it's all about. And if you haven't played it, you've walked it at a state tournament, you know, watching your school play. But they had a players tour event at Black Wolf Run this summer that I happened to go to for the second day. And you had all the you know, the stars were there. Sarah Balding, Elise Hoven, Jessica Geyser. Ironically, two girls not playing fall golf. Cassandra Pasuik of Greenfield, who doesn't play golf because her school doesn't offer it. She's a softball player in the spring and then plays all her golf during the summer. She shot 73-77 to win it. And then Joe Baranchek, who I mentioned, has won a pair of state titles. She was second. But then Jessica Geyser was third and Elise Hoven fourth. Sarah Balding struggled back then, but she was also fighting a wrist injury, Gary. So, you know, it's hard to read too much into it. What you can read into it is I think it's going to be the most consistent player and probably the most experienced player that's going to win. So I think it might be a lot to ask Jessica Geyser to be that person. I see the state tournament coming down to a battle between Elise Hoven and Sarah Balding. And I just, the way Sarah Balding has been so consistent this fall, right now I would give Sarah Balding the nod over Elise Hoven in my Division I crystal ball. And in Division II, I'd be hard-pressed to think that Ava Sally isn't going to win a state title. She's a sophomore from Prescott who's really, you know, taken on a rigorous schedule over the last couple of years. And I think she's going to, you know, use that experience to her benefit, and there really aren't very many people in Division II that can catch her. As far as teams go, you know, I'd like to think Brookfield Central is going to win it, but I really like Heartland Arrowhead, and this is why. Their number two golfer, Lauren Peterson, is a number one golfer that is wearing the number two label because Jessica Geyser arrived in the program this year, and Lauren has handled that, you know, you would call it a demotion going from one to two. Very well, and she has a lot to offer as a junior, and in terms of leadership and a second great score. After that, it's kind of a, you know, they're very even teams, but I think Lauren Peterson might give Arrowhead the nod in a state tournament situation over Brookfield Central, but we'll see. And don't count out Kettle Moraine. If they can get a fourth score, they could be a factor. And then, like I said, if Wanakee can each girl lower that score by two or three shots, it could get very interesting at Black Wolf Run. In Division II, I really think this is Prescott's year to shine. And I mentioned this is going to be a very historic state tournament, because if Prescott or St. Croix Central, the two teams that are favored to win state, do, it would be the first time that a public school has won the Division II state championship. So there's my crystal ball, Gary. I'm not sure if any of it will come through. I batted probably about 677 coming out of the regionals as far as teams go. And then as far as the individual qualifiers, we don't want to get into that.
That's a pretty good batting average, Rob. And I'll tell you what, I'm 1,000% more educated about girls' high school golf now than I was 36 minutes ago. So great job. I got nothing else for you. I'm just looking forward to your coverage, though, in the coming week and a half here.
I'm glad, because being the high school golf nerd that I am, I'm going to get this podcast ready to go, and then sit there and live on live scoring the rest of the day, as many parents do, coaches do, and fans of high school golf. So I appreciate you indulging me with a few questions on the WIA sectionals going on this week. Gary, I'm exhausted. I don't know about you. It's time for you to get out and play some fall golf. I'm going to hang out on the computer, and we'll talk golf again next week. How's that sound?
Sounds good, Rob. Thank you.
All right, for Gary D'Amato, I am Rob Hernandez. This has been Talking.Golf, sponsored by Southwest Wisconsin Technical College in Fenimore. Did you know that Southwest Tech is for people with a passion for golf? That's right. They offer a golf course management program with a 100% job placement rate. The program helps students learn the industry and turn that passion into a rewarding career. The golf course management program at Southwest Tech is led by Scott Kennedy, a PGA professional who also coaches the Chargers golf team in the NJCAA. Men, women, there are opportunities for everyone at Southwest Tech in Fenimore. To learn more, go to swtc.edu/golf. We'll talk golf again next week.